We the best girlies.
That's always so much fun to watch.
It does take its toll on me, you know.
My mind, like a Rolodex, like height and crazy slots. I'm a flip through for the mentors, can't select, my mind gets lost. They thinking they a player, but it's really not a game. You pay my rent and bills, bitch, I ain't even know your name.
Ugh, not him again, CBA.
What's that? Ring, ring, it's your man trying to get a booking. I'm making bars with my pants on, best believe I've got my socks on. I ain't taking this shit off, like Mary Ann's fully clothed.
I wonder if they're self-conscious like me.
Big ass t-shirts, gay ass shorts, catch us at the tennis court. I don't care what the fuck you thought, bitches trying to fuck but they can't walk. John's thinking that they slip, but I ain't touching that dick. I'll hold your balls like Netero, I ain't passing this shit. Catch me in the gym, getting beef like biscuit. Gourmet hunter, this pussy, eat it out, get frisky. Hack these tricks, minds like Maluki, but like Leorio, I'm kind, so they choose me. I put respect on my fam like a replica. You trying to sabotage like Tompa. If a bitch try me, I'm taking your man. He's clap bounce back like bungee gum. Hit up moral like you active, my man. Got that purple haze. Spread out sweating on the sofa, smoking a J with Ellen and May.
I never said I could rap. If you could see me right now, I'm twirling my fingers around in a circle. Alright, I'm overheating now, so I'm going.
Hello everyone, welcome to Deptford x Deptford, with me, Ashley Williams, and we've also got Gabriella Davies here.
Hi.
We are part of Babe World, so I just thought we would start by doing just a brief bio slash overview of what we're going to be talking about and a bit about us. So first I'll start with us. So, collaborators Ashley Williams and Gabriella Davies, more commonly known as Babe World, seek to create a more representative art world through the creation of art and facilitation of events for those who are marginalised in the arts. With an emphasis on collaboration and co-creation, Babe World's practice focuses on themes of political and societal identity, specifically disability and access, mental health, sex work, and poverty porn. Babe World's community building and marketing strategies to audiences and participants consists of oversharing, otherwise known as attention seeking, on the internet, in art networks, and through their events. By collaborating with other underrepresented artists, Babe World cultivates networks to grow their online platform to fundraise and create grants for marginalised people and communities every month. Whew, let me have a sip of my Diet Coke.
We sound so smart.
We've got huge, gorgeous brains. And then a bit about what this segment is going to be about. So, we've all had our look around the art world, predominantly white, cis, middle-class men, making art about, well, whatever they feel like. With the world set up for the most privileged to navigate smoothly, us marginalised folks have very few frames of reference when it comes to cruising or clawing through life. So, how do you find yourself represented in mainstream media and popular culture, if at all? This piece that we're presenting to you today explores the attachment of us to fictional characters in the anime Hunter x Hunter or Hunter x Hunter. Using the mistreatment of Illumi and Aluka Zoldyck to discuss our placements within society, we aim to weave tales of our lived experiences with some scenes from Hunter x Hunter, while convincing the audience why we think Illumi is autistic and Aluka is trans. We're going to debate the highs and lows of trans and autistic representation and offer a dialogue that the art world and academia often skims across. AKA, when was the last time you heard academics talking about cartoons?
Like, now?
Okay. So, for those of you who have no idea what Hunter x Hunter is, I thought that I would give you a bit of backstory. I love talking, if you can't tell. So, Hunter x Hunter is an anime television series based off a manga, and the story begins with a young boy named Gon Freecss, who one day discovers that the father, who he thought was dead, is in fact alive and well. He learns that his father, Ging, is a legendary hunter, an individual who has proven himself an elite member of humanity. despite the fact that Ging left his sons with his relatives in order to pursue his own dreams, Gon becomes determined to follow in his father's footsteps, pass the rigorous hunter exam, and finally find his father to become a hunter in his own right. It's very emotional, if you can't tell.
It's deep.
It's deep and emotional. It's got daddy issues. It's gorgeous. It's everything. So, we thought that we would start by kind of like debating two characters and why we kind of think that they're autistic or trans. So I'm going to start by talking about Illumi Zoldyck and why I basically think he's an autistic icon. So, Hunter x Hunter was an obsession I developed over lockdown. I'd watched the first couple episodes years back, but given up on it because, I don't know, some reason or another. So fast forward to now, and I have a Gon and Killua tattoo, and Illumi, my autistic icon, is also tattooed on my wrist. So I've gathered you here today to talk about why I think Illumi Zoldyck is autistic. Now, as someone who is autistic and is blessed to be surrounded by other autistic people, there's some common threads. One being absolutely exhausted post-socialization, post-work, or even post-big Sainsbury's. Some of this is caused by this gorgeous thing called masking, where you basically pretend to be completely neurotypical in order to fit in or cope with your surroundings. Sometimes I'll walk into a room and make myself the main character because having the choice to feels better than being forced. It's like a control thing, right? So now to Illumi. For the first handful of episodes, his appearance is different. A sculpted face, covered in yellow pins, and he moves very rigidly. A bit of background so you're not completely lost. They're taking the hunter exam, which is basically an adventurer's exam, but with more murder. And they're told in this episode to collect a badge off of their assigned opponent within 3 days and shield themselves to not get it stolen once you've stolen it. It's basically a free-for-all. Illumi manages to get his tag from his opponent using his own method within the first hour. Very me, very autism. Having an absolutely random but hyper-specific method for completing tasks in ways which may seem absolutely unruly to non-neurodivergent people really is the story of my life. I saw Illumi do this, implement his own working methods to get the task done, and done fast. In the scene, we see him removing the pins, ultimately demasking. He does this post-badge collecting, post-big task. Having a demask / big breather post-task is a common neurodivergent feel, so I'm sat here like, yes, I am you, Illumi. Anyway, he goes to his mate and demasks, and he complains about how tired this makes him, how it really takes it out of him. Being autistic and being the kind of autistic that heavily masks by being super high energy all the time, it really takes it out of you. Burnout is real. And this isn't a topic that is covered by mainstream media, so to see this idea reflected in anime was kind of an iconic moment. I don't mask so much anymore, but friends would often denote me as life of the party, when I just wanted to scream at them, it's all or nothing. It's this, or I go dig a hole and sleep underground for 72 hours like Illumi. And that's my base argument. So I'm going to pass over to Gabriella Davies, who's now going to be talking about why Illumi Zoldyck is trans.
Thanks.
Wow, what an underwhelming thank you.
Yeah, I sound really grateful, don't I? Okay, so I've watched Hunter x Hunter like 3 times now, I think. So I guess you could say I'm a bit of a fan. If you haven't seen it and you're at all into cartoons, anime, or anything animated, or even if you're just like kind of looking to get into it and you want a strong entry, I'd strongly recommend you give this a watch.
Oh, yes.
Like the character, the story, the animation, absolutely everything about it is chef's kiss. Anyway, enough of that. The reason I'm here is, like Ash said, to talk to you about another notable member of the Zoldyck clan.
Woo!
I mean, to be fair, they're all kind of notable, but I'm trying to get some hype going here, so just allow it, yeah? And a fellow trans icon, yes, I'm also claiming myself as a trans icon, Illumi Zoldyck. Now, we don't actually get to properly be introduced to Illumi until like the final stretch of the series. I think it's like the final arc, if I remember right. but I'm pretty sure she's alluded to prior to that by other characters, but that's about it, and even then I'm pretty sure she's repeatedly misgendered. And to be honest, I think that's where like the trans parallels kind of start for me, before we even like meet her. I don't want to speak for other people's experiences too much, but I'm like pretty confident in saying that the cis people in our lives misgendering and deadnaming us as trans people when we aren't physically present is like a pretty common one. Okay, so when we finally get to like a proper introduction to Iluka, we find her like very literally locked away in a basement in the Zoldyck family mansion. So on the one hand, that kind of thing, that's kind of cool, because like, you know, mansion life. But also, locked in a basement, that's not a vibe. She's surrounded by brightly coloured stuffed animals, blue sky wallpaper, and a princess pink four-poster bed. It's a total femme high kid, like high femme kid's dream. Her family refer to her variously as it, him, brother, dark and uncontrollable, alongside a number of other masculine terms and honorifics. It's pretty bleak, right? The thing is, a lot of this is likely to be pretty standard fare if you're trans and aren't lucky enough to have a supportive or understanding family or home environment. This treatment and the impression her family gives of her represents like a stark contrast with her overtly feminine presentation and her like super naive and innocent demeanor. Fortunately, she has an understanding elder brother in Killua, who sweeps in to take her away and free her from her restrictive home life. Unfortunately, it sounds like she's internalized her family's views of her already by the time this happens. I actually can't tell you how deep it cuts when she like asks Killua, "Do you think I shouldn't be here? Would the family be better off without me? Would you all get along better?" Like, that shit's so fucking real. Like, I've thought that to myself, like, in my life so many times, especially when I was a kid. So all this is, like, way sad. But, like, in a weird way, it's amazing to see relatable experiences like these being portrayed in a way where the trans person isn't the bad guy, and it's happening in a place you wouldn't really expect. Like, an animated show for kids, basically. Iluka's gender identity is never directly addressed in the show, it's only alluded to by the kinds of things that I already mentioned before, but for me that also kind of works. I know we're like totally starved of representation, and it does wonders in that respect to have openly trans characters whose gender shit gets addressed directly. But also, I don't know about anyone else, but have you ever noticed that like when we get that, that's literally all we get? It's like, a lot of the trans representation I see is mostly interested in spelling out trans people's trauma for cis audiences, and it means that like a lot of trans characters never really get the kind of fully rounded, multidimensional, complex character treatment that I want from them. In my opinion, Iluka's gender identity being treated as mostly incidental is kind of a win, because it means I get to see a trans character with the emphasis on the character and not on the trans.
Gorgeous.
Thanks for listening to our rambles. So we're just kind of just going to discuss like why we wanted to talk about this and stuff like that. So first of all, I'm going to start by talking about like why the fuck are we talking about cartoons and stuff like that and anime. So like me and Gabby love anime and cartoons. I actually hadn't watched anime for like 2 years, and then Gabby was like, "Do you want to watch Hunter x Hunter again?" And I was like, "I've actually only watched the first 10 episodes." And she was like, "Oh my god, you're gonna die, you need to watch this." But like, I didn't expect that it would actually bring me so many feelings and actually give me a space to like reflect upon things, which was absolutely wild. I think that in like academic settings like the school system and like higher education and art galleries, like major galleries in institution, there's so much weight on what is and what isn't academia, and cartoons have kind of been a place where it's like, you know what, they're actually smarter than you in your giant book, because they're talking about very big large concepts in quite simple, easy to digest ways, which is like big brain moment. It's very iconic. So when I started kind of seeing big topics that we discuss, like meritocracy, for example, is reflected in My Hero Academia. Navigating queer relationships is in Adventure Time. The Obsidian, the new one, watch it if you haven't watched it. but like using these as a framework to talk about big things so that more people can interact and digest and access the topic that you're talking about has been a really nice thing for me, and kind of like takes away all that fear of being in an academic setting, because I don't know about you, but I still don't know what ontology means. And I really don't really understand praxis.
Me
either. So I'm like, can we actually just watch Rent a Girlfriend instead and talk about sex work politics?
Because that's praxis.
Because that's praxis. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it's really dope because, like, I don't know, like, I managed to somehow get through a BA and a Master's without ever reading any of the books that they told me to. I think I tried reading some Foucault like once, and it didn't mean anything to me. Like,
why would it mean anything to you? It's like you don't see yourself reflected in it.
You know what though? Like, I kind of like I don't see myself reflected in it. Like, as a trans person, as a working class person, like I think a lot of marginalized people, whatever the marginalization may be, will probably feel the same about a lot of academic texts. But I've got like a nagging suspicion that like actually nobody relates to it, and it doesn't relate to anybody's experience because it's so incredibly abstract.
Oh my god, that's the one thing that I hate, is that when people even write these like big formal books about like, well, when like academic books, not everyone, not every single book is terrible, that's not what I'm trying to say, but like the ones that you get given,
all the books are terrible.
Yeah, every single book made is terrible, burn it. No, it's like, that's not what I mean. What I mean is that these books that we are given in academic reading lists in these major institutions that we've attended from our experience have been talking about concepts such as meritocracy and class conflicts and representation in the arts, but in these big abstract ways. And it's like, if you are not giving me a hyper-specific example and you're just giving me this giant abstract, then to be quite honest, I'm autistic and I'm not sure what you're talking about because my brain has five conversations at once and I'm not actually too sure what you're actually talking about. So it's like, I can't even engage with the framework that I'm given because it's not accessible to me. Anyway, I went on a tangent about myself as per usual. Back to Gabby.
We're a house of going on tangents about ourselves. I'm pretty sure the dog would do it if she could.
Trust me. I'm surprised the dog hasn't barked yet, honestly. The dog has, like, dementia and barks at any noise. So, like, I'm actually quite shocked. She must be having a great time.
Anyway, as I said, I don't think they relate to anybody's experience. But what I, like, what I loved when about cartoons, when I started really thinking about it, is, like Ash said, the ideas were all there, but I mean, they're made for, like, a lot of them are made for younger audiences or for teenagers, like, so all the ideas need to be digestible, but, like, I think it's something about, like, the format, like, they're telling you a story, so all of the ideas are, like, put into some kind of practice, and, like, they're given some kind of emotional context, like, you don't just, like, learn all the right words, you don't just, like, learn how to think about it, you learn how to feel through it as well.
It's kind of hard though, because this is a thing, because in my head I feel like I'm in a big conflict where I'm like, don't perform your trauma porn to people, but at the same time give them a hyper specific example so they know how it directly affects you. And it's, I think in the art world especially, trying to find that balance between like, hey, look at me and my experiences, but also this is my whole life that I'm bearing to you, my soul, please, please, please don't trample on it, is such a hard barrier that we as artists are trying to face. And I think that like Hunter x Hunter and like My Hero Academia and Adventure Time really face these hard issues in like a way that is like emotional enough so that you can have some kind of like attachment or feel some kind of way towards it, but not too traumatic that it like it's almost like trauma porn. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and the thing is like it's because it's like, I think part of it is because it's not like, it's not pointing directly at these issues and saying we're going to discuss this. They're just there, just like they are in life. And you sort of have to like, you have to navigate your way through them, like one way or the other. And it just does that for you. And it has like, and because it's like a made up world with a narrative, like it has a philosophy to it. It has the philosophy of whoever wrote it or like whatever philosophy they decided they were going to write into it.
Yeah, and I think that with a lot of the stuff that when you're in an institution and or you're at an arts educational setting, that you're kind of forced to pander to an audience, or not even pander, but create something that an audience want to see. So from my experience, I've been told by multiple galleries and in an educational setting that like my work needs to be the palatable version of my experience. My experience has to be either diluted or idolized. It's one of the two. It's either dilute it enough so that you're not talking directly about us, or like make it the most traumatic, painful experience you possibly can so that we can feel something. And that can't, that's not very safe for a lot of artists. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, fully. I had a really good thought. No, I forgot it. Yeah.
I think that the problem with that is that like, I don't know about you, but I've had situations where I've kind of like found myself like, wait, I don't even know who I'm making art for, or why, or what. And I kind of like lost this idea of kind of creating stuff for myself to work through stuff for myself. And it turned into this, how can I present my trauma in a sellable way? Which is kind of what I'm trying to steer away towards now, and more just like open up a discussion about what it actually means for us to be represented. Is it us being, giving you our painful experiences, or is it us being in positions of power to make change? Does that make sense?
Yeah, fully. I just remember what I was gonna say.
Go, go, go!
This almost never happens. So what I was gonna say was, like, I think that the art world does not handle complexity very well. Which is ironic, because it's sort of like these things that we're taught, these books and this academic text that we're talking about, present themselves like a sort of like in this very complex way, but it's sort of like, I don't know, it's like the performance of complexity almost.
Yeah.
And what they want to see when they see us talking about like our experiences is like, show us how well you understand your own experience, and like the pain, and like communicate it to us. But like, they want, like, it's like Ash said, they want, like, a very, like, sort of binary model of things. You know what I mean?
And this isn't every single arts org ever. This is just some major institutions that we've worked with, can we just say, by the way?
Yeah, and it's
Depfidex are great.
We love you, Depfidex. It's not about, like, any sort of, like, one institution, in my opinion. It's more of, like, general trends and the way that, like, arts is taught in educational institutions.
Definitely, and I think that with institutions like art galleries and stuff, it is about trends, because it's like, there's a reason why we are here on Depfidex's platform talking about this and feel comfortable doing so.
Yeah.
There is a reason why we haven't been able to talk about this before, and why there's been no platform for us to talk about this before. Does that make sense? So it's kind of like, you are boxed in by these ideals that each person or gallery or institution wants you to do, especially in an educational setting. Because it's like, I've had people, when I was writing my dissertation about my experience of being mixed race, my teacher, I was wearing like 40-inch weave at the time. It was very iconic. And then my teacher said to me, why don't you write about your hair? And I was like, did I ask? I don't want to write about my hair. I want to quote Megan Thee Stallion. Leave me alone. Do you know what I mean? So it's just kind of like, I feel like a lot of my experience has kind of been like pandering to the institution and doing what they say, but I'm kind of at a point where I'm like, you know what, sometimes that is actually more damaging to my community than if I actually just put my foot down and say, no, I will not do this for you.
Yeah,
do you
literally,
know what I mean?
Because like everything gets flattened into the same stuff. It's like a white person sees a black person talking about race, and they think in terms of like signifiers like hair or food, or I don't know, darkness of skin. Like, I don't know. It's in, and it's sort of, all it does is like in this context serves to like, especially where it's being consumed by people outside of the community.
Exactly, and it's like, yes, some one person's blackness may be represented by their hair, by their food, by their music, but that is not for you to put a sticker on and say your blackness is represented by this.
Or
every person's blackness, exactly, because my blackness means different things to what my other black friend's blackness might mean, what my mum's blackness means. Like, it depends on the person, and this idea stamp of like, this is what this looks like, mm-hmm. is currently what I think is like a big detriment in like the art world currently.
Yeah, imagine like the, do you remember like the This Is Now albums?
Now that's what I call blackness,
now that's what I call transness, that's basically what we're getting.
Exactly.
To. And everything just gets like flattened, and there becomes this sort of like this one sort of manageable version of a thing, but realistically everybody has a different experience. There is no one like thing of anything. Just as just as people like you know, cis white middle class people, like they're allowed, there's an acknowledgement that they have like a multitude of different experiences.
Exactly.
And so does everybody else. Like, even though they may be impacted by our marginalization,
exactly.
Like, it's not like, like, I'm so sick of having to talk about gender, to be honest, because I have a life beyond that. Beyond being trans.
Exactly. So, yeah. So to, like, summarise, basically, after the sound off, it's basically that, like, we've kind of given up. Not given up. We are not letting ourselves engage with stuff that causes us pain anymore, or seeking representations in things that have never been set up to be for us. So let's use these existing structures to create an alternative way for us to all exist. Let's fucking make cartoons on university watch lists, and let's put magazines on reading lists, and let's use Instagram comments as a place to like hold discussions. I think, yes.
Keep the big words out of it.
I can't spell. Thank you so much for listening.
Thanks, guys.
And thank you so much for Deptford X for the platform.
Mm-hmm.
And to Aja Radio, AAJA, thank you so much. I said certified free, 7 days a week. Wet ass pussy, make that pull out game weak.
Drip down inside of me, quick jump out for you, let it get inside of me. I tell them where to put it, never tell them where I'm about to be. I run down on them before I have a nigga running me. Talk your shit, bite your lip, ask for a call while you ride that dick. You really ain't never got him fucking for a thing. He already made his mind up before he came. Now get your boots, hang your coat for this wet ass pussy. He bought a phone just for pictures of this wet ass pussy. Pay my tuition just to kiss me on this wet ass pussy. Now make it rain if you wanna see some wet ass pussy.
Look, I need a hard hit, I need a deep stroke, I need a Henny drink, I need a weed smoke. Not a garden snake, I need a King Cobra with a hook in it, hope it lean over. He got some money, then that's where I'm headed. Pussy ain't one, just like his credit. He got a beard when I'm tryna wet it. I let him taste it, now he diabetic. I don't wanna spit, I wanna go, I wanna gag, I wanna joke. I want you to touch that little dangly thing that's swinging the back of my throat. My head can misfire, but I need the sunny. It's going and drying, it's coming outside, yeah. I run on that den, now the cops behind me. I spit on his mic and I heat tryna sign me.
Your Honor, I'm a freak. Handcuffs, leashes, switch my wig, make him feel like he G10. Put him on his knees, give him something to believe in. Never lost a fight, but I'm looking for a beat. In the food chain, I'm the one that eat you. If he ate my ass, he's a bottom feeder. Big D stand for big demeanor. I can make you bust before I ever meet you. If it don't hang, then he can't bang. You can't hurt my feelings, but I like pain. If he fuck me and ask who's is it, when I ride the dick, I'ma spell my name. Ah.